Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Former President of the United States, Donald Trump, indicted in Manhattan for charges that lead to a felony, 34 counts, we're told by the New York Times. What to focus on? The unprecedented nature is my first thought, and I go to Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution, writing in American Greatness, about the fact that it's unprecedented and what that means. Victor, a very good evening to you. Everything's happened in the United States history of almost 250 years, except what we just witnessed, the indictment of a former president or a president, and the indictment itself establishes risks. What risks, Victor? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. There's a lot of risk. First of all, it's open season on the opposition party, and we have literally thousands of local and state prosecutors analogous to Mr. Bragg. And we have a whole array of Democratic and liberal candidates that live or conduct business in their jurisdictions, i.e. conservative jurisdictions. And I think the conservative traditionalists are trying to adjudicate whether responding in kind would stop this insanity or it would just increase the spiral to the Republic. That's one thing. I don't think that an American president can give a lecture, John, abroad to anybody in Africa or Asia or South America about the necessity of democratic institutions and nation building, and they need to emulate our system. We have lost all credibility. And third, I think a lot of people feel that this is not the end, it's the beginning. And this was coordinated by the left, and it was designed to attack Donald Trump to such a degree that he would gain empathy, but not destroy his candidacy outright. In other words, as you saw, the polls surge in support as they should to rally around somebody who's been a victim of egregious attacks. But I think what the left is counting on is that Mr. Bragg's indictments, and then the indictments in Georgia, and then the indictments in the special counsel case about the Mar-a-Lago raid will give us about a year and a half of nonstop court hearings, threat, bombshell, walls are closing in, disclosures, leaks, and he will be a hemorrhaging candidate in the general election, and that will destroy the opportunities of other candidates. And so I think that was part of the calculus, as well as just the insane obsessions and fixations with Donald Trump that we've seen with the two impeachments, or the impeachment as a private citizen, or the raid on Mar-a-Lago.
Your essay in American Greatness reminds me of the summer of 2016, when James Comey, then the director of the FBI, made unilateral decisions. We're told now, we didn't know at the time. Unilateral decisions about the candidate, Hillary Clinton, who wasn't a former president, former first lady, senator, secretary of state, not a president. And the decision first in July, as I recall, I don't have the date in front of me, but it was early July, was not to go forward with the investigation of how Mrs. Clinton had mishandled her documents on an open server, making the classified documents at great risk to our adversaries. And Mr. Comey came forward and told us all in surprise at the time he was not going to go forward, that no prosecutor would indict for this matter, something paraphrased like that. And I think that was the right decision, not to intervene in the presidential contest then underway. We had just weeks till the vote. But then toward the end of the campaign in October, is my memory, Mr. Comey made the opposite decision to raise the specter again of classified documents or something on a computer that had come into the FBI's possession because of a legal member of the family of Mrs. Clinton's assistant. It was all very involved. But Mr. Comey, for several days, said we're investigating new information, and then called it off. That was seen by the Clinton campaign at the time and immediately after the vote as determinative for having moved the electorate away from Mrs. Clinton towards Mr. Trump. So Comey, in a matter of months, made the right decision not to prosecute and made the wrong decision to raise the possibility of prosecution. I tell all that long story, Victor, because your essay reminded me of it, and it appears that there were no lessons learned from that by the Democratic Party that both enjoyed and suffered under Comey's arbitrary decision-making.
No, there wasn't. I do think, though, John, that she lost the election because she was down inordinately in Georgia and Arizona to try to get a mandate, an electoral college blowout, and she just simply took the blue wall states of Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin, et cetera, for granted. And then I think her comment about the deplorables was really deadly to her campaign. My only problem with James Comey in that particular instance was he was not a district attorney and he was not a special counsel. So it wasn't his prerogative to determine whether she should be indicted. His job as FBI director was to hand over the evidence at his disposal to Loretta Lynch, who was the attorney general, but who, for political reasons, because she had been caught on the tarmac with Bill Clinton, as you remember, had recused herself. But she had never really appointed a prosecutor. So in that void, James Comey's ego sort of took a hold of him, and he became an investigator and a prosecutor, even though he didn't have any authority to do so. As far as Hillary Clinton, at the time, I do think it was much different in this sense. She's never been president of the United States, as Donald Trump was. We've had a lot of officials, former officials with high portfolios like Secretary of State or running for office that have been indicted. I don't think it was wise to indict anybody in the last days of a campaign. You're absolutely right about that. But later, she was probably guilty of four felonies. And one of them, as you remember, was she destroyed subpoenaed emails and the devices on which they were used, that were used to communicate them. They were under subpoena. That was a felony. It was a felony to traffic in I think there was 37 classified messages that she used on her home foods server by intent. That was another probably felony. It's a campaign violation to hire a foreign national to work in a U.S. campaign, presidential campaign. She hired Christopher Steele, and she hid that $300,000 payment through three paywalls, as you remember, the Perkins Coe law firm, the DNC, and Fusion GPS. And then fourth, she labeled that pay to, because it was illegal and she was trying to smear her opponent, she labeled that as legal expenses. And according to Mr. Bragg, that would have been a felony. So I think when people look back at that and then they compare what Donald Trump has alleged, and as you probably have discussed with other guests, he's obligated to tell us what exactly these crimes were that followed from the bookkeeping error or the deliberate bookkeeping error, whatever he wants to call it. He never did. So I think a lot of people are looking at Hillary Clinton or John Brennan lying under oath or James Clapper lying under oath or Andrew McCabe lying four times to a federal investigator or James Comey pleading amnesia 245 times under oath or Robert Mueller claiming he didn't know what GPS and the Steele dossier that prompted his own investigation were. And they think, what is going on? There's two sets of laws. And I think that's another problem, that half the country has no longer any faith in the American judicial system.
The future, Victor, promises alarming events. We can't even imagine the year 2050, because I believe what's happened is that a new electioneering tool has been created out of nothing. It is going to be success or not success to indict the leading candidate of the opposite party during the campaign season to see if it swings certain votes your way or disrupts that campaign in some fashion that slows it down. That is now a stratagem that will be cited by our inheritors for the rest of the American Republic.
Yeah. But this is the culmination of a long precedent-breaking behavior on the part of the left. the founders in the Federalist Papers were very intent. They had an argument about how you tried an impeached president, and the two-thirds margin was to signal the House that even if you impeach a president, it's not going to result very often in a conviction, because they did not want a first-term president when he lost his majority in the House to then customarily get a vote of no confidence called impeachment. And we had not had a first-term impeachment since Andrew Johnson until they did it with Donald Trump twice. And the second one, you know, as I said earlier, they tried him as a in the Senate as a private citizen. That was precedent-breaking. Nobody thought you could do that. And then we never had a president's home raided. And in each of those cases, if you look back at it, Donald Trump was not culpable. I mean, nobody believes today that there was a Russian collusion hoax. Everybody believes today that Hunter's laptop was genuine and it was suppressed by the FBI right before the election. Nobody anymore believes the Biden syndicate family, whatever we call it, was not culpable of influence peddling, as Donald Trump had told Mr. Zelensky in that phone call or had asked him. By the way, John, remember that one of the impetus for that impeachment was that Donald Trump was trying to weaken a potential candidate in that year's election, is what exactly the left has done with Donald Trump. And then I think no one believes that that was a singular event, that Donald Trump took some papers out when he alone had the ability, whether he did or not, I don't know, to declassify them, given what President Biden did as vice president. And then for apparently 6 years, he suffered this sin of omission. He didn't tell anybody. Yet he must have known that he had broken the law in three different locations. So when you look at all that, I think this indictment was sort of the culmination of that, the precedent that you now go after an ex-president and you go after a candidate that's threatening the main candidate or the reelection efforts of somebody in your own party.
I mentioned, Victor, that our adversaries are watching very carefully. And our election process is always fraught for foreign affairs, always difficult to know what a president who's running for reelection or an empty White House that is being contested by two new men to or new men and or women on the sphere. And right now there's a war in Europe, and China routinely threatens a war in Asia. And I do not believe that entered into the consideration by first this indictment, and then we have these two other instances. We don't know if they're going to come to the same idea. One, a federal investigator, special counsel about the Mar-a-Lago documents, and another in Georgia. In other words, our enemies, our adversaries, our opponents are watching this and thinking, who's in charge over there? I can't name, right now, I couldn't tell who's leading us. The White House has stepped aside from these matters.
And just to add some detail to your analysis, John, we now learn that the Chinese actually did very carefully surveil strategic classified sites in the United States with their balloon, and they got away with it just as they stonewalled the origins of the Wuhan virus. And so their attitude was essentially, we're going to send a spy balloon because we think you're preoccupied with other things, the economy, the border at that time, the Ukraine war, and we don't think you'll do anything. And if you do anything, we don't care. And that was their attitude. And they were that was correct in their assessment, which, if you remember the Anchorage mini summit when Joe Biden took office, that was pretty much their attitude from the very beginning. And then when it was compounded by the Afghanistan withdrawal and the abandonment of, I don't know, multi-billion dollars of weaponry and supplies into the hands of terrorists, and they concluded from that that the United States either could not or would not react. And then that was sort of cemented when Joe Biden asked Vladimir Putin if he was going to conduct cyber warfare to please put off hospitals and other humanitarian sites from his hit list against us. And then he also said, when asked a month before the invasion, what would his reaction be? It said, it depends. If it's a minor incursion, he didn't really think it was that important. So we have lost deterrence, and now we're looking at $33 trillion in debt, bank failures, high interest rates, stagflationary cycle that we're told for the summer, gas prices. Saudi Arabia's cut back production. That will be followed by Kuwait and the other Arab oil producers. Russia, Japan is now buying, just announced it's buying Russian oil. I think we're going to be headed into some pretty rough time, and yet we're fiddling. We're fiddling with all of this stuff, as you point out.
You have a book, and when we come back, I'd like to ask you to comment on the citizen. The Dying Citizen is the title of your book, and how the citizen witnesses these affairs. Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution. I'm John Batchelor.
What if your top salesperson was 1,000 times more efficient? And what if a limitless digital workforce helped your number one find leads? A super team working 24/7 on their behalf, thinking, acting, and solving complex tasks so more deals closed. What if with every sale, each customer felt like they were the only customer? That would be one very efficient sales leader. Now, imagine if every person on your team worked to the power of 1,000. They can with Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.